Don't you know we're talking about a revolution that sounds peaceful? Don't you know we're talking about a revolution that sounds like a peaceful? While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds useless. Poor people gonna rise up, get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talk about the revolution.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections. It is the 16th day of August 2006, and a dark day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, first of all, and IamTheWitness.com is my website. You should go there. We have, overnight, gotten some information about a fellow investigative journalist named Christopher Bolin, who was assaulted and arrested in his front yard. Apparently he called the police himself because he found that there were, you know, suspicious undercover police department or FBI or Mossad driving around his home in this place called it's called Hoffman Estates, Illinois. And as a result of him calling the police to find out who was the suspicious car driving around, a bunch of police drove up in bulletproof gear, jumped out of the car, and began to roust him and throw him into the ground and taser him. And they, according to their own words, they actually arrested him for resisting arrest. Now, my question to you all is, I always thought you had to have broken the law before you are charged with resisting arrest, because that can't be the crime you're arrested for. In other words, there was no reason to arrest him in his front yard. The policeman that I talked to claimed that Christopher Bolin was running into his house to get a gun. But then I asked the policeman, did he know that Christopher owned a gun? And he said, no, I don't know that. And I said, well, I don't think he does own a gun, so how would he be going in the house for a gun? And in other words, ladies and gentlemen, their story is terrible. It doesn't hold water. Here is some information for you. The mayor of this town is a smug-looking guy. His name is William D. McLeod. You can find his information on the HoffmanEstates.com government webpage. His phone number is 847, that's 847-882-9100. He is the mayor of the village, William D. McLeod. The chief of police is named a man named Herdgen. Chief Herdgen, E-H-E-R-D. E-G-E-N, and his phone number, 847-882-2621. Please call both of these numbers, if you would. Please call them and let them know that you are watching the stuff that's going on. Please, you can also read the full story at Rumorville News. You can find it on IamTheWitness.com, or you can also get the story on What Really Happened with Mike Rivero. It is starting, ladies and gentlemen. The pressure is going to be starting on all quarters here. I fear that they're probably going to put something down on me soon, and as well as others. So it's going to be our response that keeps us from falling victim to this. And that includes my partner and spokesperson for the truth today, Ted Pike. His phone lines have also been acting up, oddly enough. We don't know why, but there could be a connection. You never know in this world there, Ted. I'm going to bring him up right now because we've got lots to talk about. Ted Pike, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Daryl.
Well, you know, you didn't know about this little event before I called you just now, and I'm not surprised because he has been pushing the envelope here of some information, and especially with Converse Infosystems and some of the other real serious 9/11 information, the heart of the conspiracy he's been pushing. And, of course, I don't think they can get away with just out-and-out murdering him because they saw the response for Gary Webb got when he was shot. They said he committed suicide. I think you probably know that, by shooting himself in the head twice. No one knows how that can be done with physics, but it apparently was done. But I don't think that this particular time they can get away with this. I think it would explode in their face. So they're going to rough us up.
Yeah, that makes me all the more determined today, Daryl, to really speak the whole truth on this problem of evil Jewish leadership, not only in the Middle East, but even in the city of Chicago, as we're seeing this morning.
Well, that's right. And today, I've asked Ted Pike, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, to speak about some of the moral roots of this organization, this leadership that sadly a world religion has fallen victim to. And many of the people involved in being victims of this are from this same community, from the Jewish community, and we have been trying desperately to get them to come to the realization that their leadership is dangerously flawed and even in some cases, I think, monstrously ill. But the country that they represent over in Israel as well has acted in monstrous ways recently with what they've done in Lebanon. So I think it's apropos for us to really look into why these people feel like they're superior to others, first of all, these leaders do, and what it is that in their roots, in their backgrounds that would lend them to this kind of problem. And so, Ted, I'll turn it over to you for that.
Yes, thank you, Daryl. In order to understand what is happening in the Mideast today or in the world today concerning these evil Jewish leaders I'm talking about, we have to go backward about 2,000 years to the centuries, the several centuries before Christ came to earth, in which the Pharisees from Babylon, the Pharisaic sect, established themselves as the spiritual, the moral, and even the political leaders of the Jewish people. And what they did was they basically turned upside down everything that God had ever tried to tell the Hebrews and the Jews about what was right and wrong and ethical and moral and so on. And they invented what they called the oral tradition of the scribes and Pharisees. And basically, what the oral tradition was a hodgepodge of occult techniques for reinterpreting the Old Testament precepts, such as the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law, not according to simple grammar of nouns and verbs and direct objects, which they believed was only relegated to simple-minded people. Instead, they said that the whole Law of Moses had secret interior meanings which could only be understood through numerology and various occult techniques, which they got from Babylonia. Anyway, to make a long story short, they turned everything upside down. And when Jesus came on the scene, he says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees," he said, "you by your oral tradition have made the law of God of none effect." Well, what happened was these Pharisees, out of this oral tradition, they eventually created what was called the Babylonian Talmud, which is a huge rambling compendium of Jewish law, about a couple dozen volumes. I have it in my library. And in the Talmud, it's full, it's seething with hatred of Jesus Christ, of Gentiles, and so on, vowing someday to overthrow the Gentiles, destroy Christianity, and as they describe it, to restore proper order in the earth, which means having the Jewish people in control of the nations and the Gentiles as their slaves. Now, there's also another five-volume book, which is equally inspired, according to modern observant Jews, and that's called the Zohar or Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah is the revolutionary, mystical revolutionary division of modern Jewish-inspired scriptures, and it also seethes with very specific recommendations to overthrow the Gentiles who are described as beasts and animals and actually demons, and again to restore proper order in the earth. Now, this is the underlying philosophy, theology, motivation behind the behavior of Israel in Lebanon at this very moment as they are going through the bodies, discovering more bodies in their rubble. We have to ask, as sane and moral people, what in the world motivated this new version of Dresden upon the people of Lebanon? Something like 39%, I believe, are Christians. What possible madness could have caused the nation of Israel to inflict so much suffering on the innocent? And it, in a word, it goes back to the Talmud and Kabbalah.
Well, you know, here's the interesting thing. I come at this, you come at this fight from a religious perspective, and I come at it from a geopolitical. And I've known for a long time that the groups, the masses that we needed to contact and communicate in this battle were looking at it through religious glasses, basically. In other words, the Christian community in America has been sold a bill of goods by this controlled media we face in America, as well as many of the, I think, Pharisees of the Christian religion, which would be my Mr. Hagee and my Mr. Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and so many others. These guys are actually they shouldn't be Pharisees, but I think they're liars in their own right. And so now, in order to really understand this whole situation, you have to look at the religious part of it, because it plays such a pivotal role in how people act out these crazy ideas from this Zohar and from this Torah. I mean, not Torah, from the Talmud. So, yeah. Could you continue with maybe some of the more disturbing things that allow them or give them license to commit these crimes?
Yes. Well, you see, there's an ancient rivalry here, a tremendous rivalry within Judaism against Christianity. Jesus, I believe, was the true Messiah of the Jews. He came and he told them to put down their knives and their swords and their spears. He said, the meek shall inherit the earth, not the people who go out and visit a vengeance upon their enemies. He completely canceled out the ancient a warring bloodlust, which the Hebrews manifested, I believe, through divine authorization to cleanse the land of these very, very evil and profane Canaanites. However, there was no new age of grace for these Pharisees. They continued this homicidal mentality. Now, they were thrown out of Palestine entirely in the second century A.D., but within the Talmud and within the Zohar is this unremitting desire to someday visit vengeance upon not only those who inhabit Palestine, but against the Goyim or the Christians and Gentiles throughout the world. You know, one of the things which is conspicuously absent in commentary today, even on the internet, is someone actually going back into some of these definitive proof texts of Judaism and Zionism, which give authority to the military establishment of Israel to do what it's doing today. And maybe I could do a little of that. But first,
well, please do that, because I think what we're trying to understand here, Ted, is how they could, in good conscience, bomb streaming refugees on roadways or kill children and just, yes, Slough it off as though it were not important.
That's right. We have to understand today that while the nation Israel, the government of Israel, ostensibly is secular, nevertheless, the Orthodox religion is the official Jewish religion, is the official religious position of the State of Israel.
And what group is that being represented by more than others? Is that not the Chabad Lubavitch group?
Well, it's the Orthodox position. The Orthodox position, I think you're talking about the Haredim or the Hasidic Jews, which are more ultra-Orthodox, but the Orthodox is pretty close to that. It reveres both the Talmud and the Kabbalah as the greatest inspired literature to the Jews of all time, greatly superseding the Bible itself. But this chief rabbinate of rabbis in Jerusalem is in control of not only the religious hierarchy of the nation of Israel, but it is also in control of the army. And Orthodox rabbis are the chaplains for these military forces who are going forward into Arab villages, slaughtering men and women and children and so on. And in fact, there's a quote in Israel Shahak's book about Jewish religion, Jewish history, Jewish religion, in which he quotes the chaplain for the Israel military, who says very, very, very clearly that when Jewish forces go into towns and villages in the West Side, West Bank, and so on, they are entitled to kill even the best of the Palestinians residing there. Now, there's a proof text in the Talmud, which is morally binding law or halakha, and that proof text is found in Avodah Zarah 26b, and these are the words of Simeon ben Yohai, who was one of the very greatest rabbis, the most highly esteemed rabbis of the Jewish faith for all time. And in this proof text of the Talmud, Simeon ben Yohai says, kill the best of the goyim, kill the best of the Gentiles, crush the heads of the best of the snakes. Now that is the definitive, authoritative proof text out of the Babylonian Talmud, which empowers the government of Israel now to take a religious authority and go out and kill the best of the Christians in Lebanon, the best of the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza and so on. They are using this as holy scriptures authorizing them to do that.
Well, now let me ask you this question, Ted, because it's interesting to know when we take a look at this group. They're after supremacy. What are they after? Are they after world domination? Are they after elimination? Are they after some sort of world without the goy, and only Jews are going to be roaming the earth? I mean, what is the goal of the religious element within this organization?
All right. In order to understand that, you have to understand what the Zohar or the Kabbalah teaches. Now, the Kabbalah is regarded at least as importantly as the Talmud, but among those ultra-Orthodox Jews you were just mentioning, especially on the West Bank and Gaza, the Kabbalah is even more inspired to them than the Talmud. Now, here's what happened. Here's how the Kabbalah came about. Thousands of years ago, of course, the Jews went into Babylon, and in Babylon they received a new theology there. You see, when they were back in Canaan land under Joshua and Moses and the prophets and so on, they were what's called a theistic religion. Now, in a theistic religion, you have one God, and he has a personality. He has feelings. He has intelligence. And he has a strong moral sense of right and wrong. He's happy with the righteous, and he's angry at the wicked, and he's capable of rewarding the righteous or rewarding, damning the wicked. You see, he's a full-fledged personality. But over in the east, by the Ganges River and off into the far east, we have what are called pantheistic religions of Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, and so on. And in all those religions, God doesn't really have a personality. He's a world force. He's the chi, the pantheistic world force that inhabits everything. He's in the rocks and the rivers and the sky. He's in the prostitute. He's in the whiskey bottle. Wherever there's material existence, that is God. Now, these Jews in Babylon, they absorbed that, and they created a new pantheistic version of Judaism, which exists to this moment parallel to the old-fashioned theistic version, which may be largely outdated. Anyway, we have two complete opposite conceptions of God here. Now, what the Kabbalah taught is that there exists an ultimate, remote, transcendent God who's called the En Sof. He's actually beyond existence. He's beyond rationality. He's beyond thought. He's beyond any kind of moral convictions or anything like that. He really doesn't care about what's going here on down here at the earth. He's just beyond everything. He's pure, rarefied, transcendent light. In fact, the word Zohar, Kabbalah, has to do with light. It's a religion about the wavelengths of light. Anyway, his pure light descends down until it comes to Israel. Now, Israel, according to the Kabbalah, is the middleman. Israel is the semi-divine presence of God in this universe, in this world, where cognition and rationality and action, righteousness, and all these things are manifested. Israel is the Shekinah glory here on earth. And the Jew is a very unique individual. He is not the ultimate God, but for all practical purposes, he's superior to him because he can think and he can act and he can have opinions. And so it's given to the Jewish people in the nation of Israel to be a bastion of order and rationality in a world of chaos. Now, the tragedy, according to the Zohar, is that the Gentiles, who are also beasts and also demons, they are at the lowest extreme. They're at the farthest extreme from God. They are down in the darkened world of chaos and demonic disorder and so on. Now, the great tragedy of the ages, according to the Zohar, is that because Israel was not as faithful to the teachings of the Pharisees as Israel should have been, that Israel was allowed to go into captivity, and Rome and other nations and pogroms and persecutions of Gentiles began to dominate Israel throughout the last several millennia. And this is a great, great tragedy. And the Talmud says that God himself, now here we're getting to the Talmud, and the Talmud says God has a personality. So here you see the dichotomy between these two conceptions of God, but it says God bewails himself in the fact that Israel is under control of the Gentiles and is now plotting to ways to cause travail and judgment on the Gentiles in order to deliver his people.
Now, who foisted the concept of Judeo-Christianity on the world? Was that a manifestation of these people in order to get hold sway within the Christian community?
Well, absolutely. This idea, now, we have to make it very clear that Christianity did come out of the old Hebrew religion of the Old Testament. And I believe that the Old Testament was inspired by God and is full of transcendent truth and insights and mercy and compassion and all of this. But what has been foisted on us today is this idea that Christianity and this Talmudism and Kabbalism are all basically kindred faiths compatible to one another. And that is nonsense, because these evil Jews, Kabbalistic Talmudic Jews, believe emphatically that there can be no cooperation, no long-term peaceful coexistence between Judaism and Christianity. In fact, let me just read a few passages verbatim out of the Zohar, how the Zohar is attempting to inspire Jews to overthrow the Gentiles and bring about a new world order in which the Jews will be on top. Now, I should mention the source for this. These are taken largely from the Sansino translation of the Zohar, which is produced by Sansino Press in London. This translation was made back in the early 1940s and has been definitive for Rabbinic Judaism ever since. Let me just read a little bit here. It says in Treatise Bereshith 47a, it says, Rabbi Abba said that, quote, living soul designates Israel because they are children to the Almighty, and they are holy because their holy living souls come from Him. But the Gentile souls come out of the left side of God, which is the kind of the opposite bad side of God, and they are all impure, and they defile all those who have contact with Him. And he also says here in the Zohar that living soul refers to Israel, who have holy living souls from above, and cattle and creeping thing and beasts of the earth to the other people who are not living souls. And it says again in another passage in Bereshith 25b, it says, all of these Gentiles tend to bring the world back to a state of confusion, and they cause the destruction of the temple. But as confusion gave place to light, so when God reveals himself, they will be wiped off the earth. That is, the Gentiles will. And it says redemption will not be complete until these Gentiles, whom it calls here Amalek, will be exterminated. And then the Zohar goes on to say, the people of the earth are idolaters, and it has been written about them, let them be wiped off the face of the earth, destroy the memory of the Amalekites. And
Amalek is that referring to just Christians, Muslims, or Buddhists, or everybody who's not Jewish?
Well, it says right here, it says, destroy the memory of the Amalekites. They are with us still in this fourth captivity, namely the princes of Rome, who are really Amalekites. Now, he's talking about they're not only of members of the Caucasian Roman Empire, but of the princes of the Catholic Church, meaning the Christian Church at the time that this was written. So this is a slam against both Gentiles of Latin stock and of Christians of the Roman Church of maybe the 6th or 7th century.
So what gives them the license within these documents to kill off the Arabs who are actually Semites?
Well, they're all goy. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, Daryl, that during the Middle Ages, the Jews and the Arabs had a great time together. In fact, there's very little criticism, if any, in the Talmud or Zohar of the Arabs, because the Arabs were anti-Christian, the Jews were anti-Christians, and they worked wonderfully. The Jews were merchants and middlemen for the Islamic world. The Jews actually acted as scouts for the Islamic armies in their depredations.
Well, they actually came on the heels of the Muslim invasion into Isabella and Ferdinand,
sure,
Spain, did they not?
Oh yeah, that was a golden age for Judaism in Spain. They found refuge there the world before their expulsion under Ferdinand and Isabella. That was a wonderful time of refuge. You see, they couldn't go up into England and up into Germany and France, which were throwing the Jews out and banning them. But down in Muslim Spain, they had a good time until the Goyim leadership of Spain gradually understood what was going on. They started reading the Talmud and Kabbalah and so on. You know, it's interesting that even Martin Luther in his earlier years was very, very flattering and favorable toward the Jews, but he also learned Hebrew and got a copy of the Babylonian Talmud and started reading it, and his hair stood on end, and he became very, very angry that these apostates and these intriguers were inhabiting Germany, trying to corrupt German society. In fact, Luther vowed that once he was done dealing with the corrupt papacy in the Reformation, he was going to turn his attention to taking care of the Jewish problem.
Well, now, these pogroms against this community, have they always been inspired by their meddling within the governments and in the control grid of each state that they were in, such as they've been thrown out of France two or three times, but then they ultimately find refuge there again because they end up using their usury system to give loans to the hierarchy and to the princes. And, of course, they get invited back in because of the money situation. And
yeah,
it seems like they've always snaked their way into these societies based upon their ability to lend and give money at certain times. And is that a correct assessment, or am I being a little bit, it's not really in depth?
Well, certainly their modus operandi continues to morph, to change throughout the ages. They are smart enough to pull back in times of exposure or persecution and so on. But deep within rabbinic Judaism is this deep conviction that they have a solemn moral obligation given to them by God to restore proper order in the world. And they look upon Gentile society and Gentile morals, Gentile government and religion and so on as a state of confusion, especially the belief in the Trinity, which they believe is polytheistic, believing there are three gods in one and so on, and they long to return the earth to the kind of order they believe it has to have in order to have lasting peace. Listen to this quote out of the Zohar, and before I read this quote, let me just say that I did get the text of this quote out of the Library of Congress back in the early 1980s. I went back there and I got it out of the original Rashi script Aramaic. I had scholars of Hebrew and Aramaic translate that for me, and they confirmed that the translation which I have here, which is the Panitis translation, is perfectly accurate. It says, Rabbi Jehuda said to him, Rabbi Chezkiah, quote, he is to be praised who is able to free himself from the enemies of Israel. And the just are much to be praised to get free from them and fight against them. Rabbi Chezkiah asked, well, how must we fight against them? And Rabbi Jehuda said, by wise counsel thou shalt war against them. By what kind of war? The kind of war that every son of man must war against his enemies, which Jacob used against Esau by deceit and trickery wherever possible. They must be fought against without ceasing until proper order be restored. Thus it is with satisfaction that I say we should be free, we should free ourselves from them and rule over them. Now this is considered the highest inspired scripture, not only to the ultra-Orthodox Haredim on the West Bank, but to Orthodox Jews in Israel and to the Orthodox rabbinate in Jewish Judaism, and also to the military establishment in the IDF forces going into Lebanon today. They view the Gentiles as animals, as goyim, and by whatever means, by trickery, deceit, manipulation, they are to work toward their extermination.
Now, how many of the rank-and-file Jews in the United States or Europe, and many of them, you know, they're not adherent in very large numbers, in fact. How many of them are really aware that their religion professes these kind of illnesses? I mean, this is illness, in my view. And how many of them are aware of it? I mean, is this a secret within their own community, or are people given an idea of just how bizarre some of these claims are when they're growing up as Hebrew students going to Hebrew school and whatnot? Or is this stuff kept from them? Kind of like you know, you don't get the information until you're a higher level Mason. Well, you don't get this information maybe unless you graduate to rabbi status. What does the rank and file Jew know about this?
Well, the Zohar certainly is in the public domain. It's on the bookshelf in the Library of Congress, and anybody can go in there and read it. But what's happened in America is that after almost 2,000 years of persecution, the Jewish people have come on a really good thing, a real promised land here in America, where they are flattered and they are coddled and they are never criticized, certainly never persecuted, and so on. The evangelical community in Christian America gathers around the Jew as the apple of God's eye, immune to even to criticism. They believe that a terrible curse will come upon them if they even criticize a Jew. So what has happened in America is that the rank and file average suburban Jew has become very much softened, and he may well be oblivious to what these verses are saying in the Zohar and the Talmud. In fact, I visited a conservative a congregation here in Portland and had a good talk with a very attractive and mild-mannered and intelligent young Jew there who just found found an oasis in me. He said he'd never found anybody who knew as much about Judaism as I did, and I made it clear I was a Christian and so on. We had a very affable time, but he was lamenting that in America, most Jews have become apathetic and assimilated into Gentile Christian culture and so on, and they don't read the Talmud, they don't read the Kabbalah and so on, and they are quite ignorant of their Jewish roots. And so what I'd have to say is many, many, many Jews in America, in fact, 50% now of Jewish young men are marrying Gentile girls in contradiction to Jewish tradition. They would not agree with this. They certainly have not read these passages, mm-hmm. and would not have sympathy for this kind of conspiracy if they knew what was going on.
And now, that is the cause of your declaration that this is evil Jewish leadership.
Exactly.
And I use the term Zionists,
yeah.
because they, by and large, the people who have fomented this most recent round of sickness in the world are what I would declare as people who have reestablished Zion or
yeah.
Israel, that is. So
yeah.
So you can't blame the rank and file Jews in general, because many of them, as you said, are not adherent, and others of them are ill informed, and maybe others of them don't even agree with this kind of nonsense. This is
absolutely, and my eschatology, my theology believes that someday Jesus Christ will return, and out of great tribulation, out of these assimilated Jews, people many of whom have high intentions, good intentions, he will find a believing remnant who will see the error, the folly, the madness, the oppression of their fathers, and will repent and turn again to Jesus' true Messiah. In fact, I'm very interested in protecting the interests of these many, many Jews throughout the world who are not part of this evil Jewish conspiracy coming from the Pharisaic top. And one of the reasons I fight ADL and expose them is because they are giving many, many high-minded and innocent Jews a bad name, because ADL is taking away free speech around the world through its hate laws. It's inciting anti-Semitism. In fact, this whole blitz in Lebanon does nothing but raise world anti-Semitism tremendously.
Well, I don't think it did, see, because you're assuming that the people that are committing these crimes are Semitic. And what I know about Semitism is that everybody who has been born and raised in that region of the world, so the Arabs and the Palestinians have more Semitic blood than their oppressors.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And so there's a real contradiction in terms here, because by and large, the people who have foisted these sicknesses upon the Middle East are coming from a Mongolian background and even a Northern Russian heritage rather than Semitic.
Yeah.
But they use this tool. Ruling by deception, they come out and call me an anti-Semite. That would mean I don't like Palestinians. I think they're wonderful.
Yeah. Actually, the people of Lebanon are Semitic. Syrians and Lebanese have strong Semitic genes in them. In fact, they have a lot more Semitic genes than these Khazar founders of Israel, who came down out of the Khazar communities of Eastern Europe at the beginning of the century.
Well, this is exactly out of the Kabbalah, the Zohar. It says by deception, by all means at our disposal, by using lies and sleight of hand. I mean, and they've done a wonderful job of it, and used their influence to force this message upon the rest of us.
Yeah.
And many of us don't buy into it, Ted. I never have. It's always seemed fundamentally flawed in its presentation. And I don't have any anger against people from any religion or anybody, as long as they're not out to try to hurt me.
Yeah. Well, I should make it clear that my research has shown that roughly 30% of world Jewry, maybe a little bit less, are actually the general descendants of the tribe of Judah, which was expelled back entirely from Palestine in the several centuries after Christ. So there is a core of some authentic Jews within the state of Israel and world Jewry.
And haven't they been treated terribly in that
state? They have.
In other words, this is almost like the fake Jews that are doing much of this.
You bet. And now, one thing I have to make very clear is that even though you see, World Orthodox Jewry, which comes out of ADL B'nai B'rith, they consider all this assimilation and sweetness and light between the Jews and Christians here in America, they consider this a disaster. They consider this just about as bad as the Holocaust, as far as decimating the integrity of Judaism and the Jewish people, to have half of their young men going off and marrying Gentile girls. They're very, very troubled about this. The Orthodox evil Jewish hierarchy is determined to try to get as many of these young Jews back into the Orthodox fold as they possibly can. That's why they're fighting the Southern Baptists and fighting other Christian organizations who proselytize, who preach the gospel to the Jewish people. They consider them anti-Semitic and a great threat. Now, this assimilation, this apathy, this goodwill and so on, which exists among many American Jews, is not largely shared toward the Goyim and the Christians in Israel. Now, in Israel, you have you have this militancy, especially among the settlers in Gaza and the West Bank. They're called ultra-Orthodox or Haredim or Hasidim, whatever. But they are strict followers of the Kabbalah. They are very familiar with these passages out of the Zohar I have read, and they literally view those little Arab kids as jackrabbits to be shot at and blown up and discriminated against, and they have no compunctions about denying them water rights and cutting off their fuel and their electricity and their sources of food, because it's just like gophers out in the field, you know. You'd get your .22 and go out and shoot gophers, wouldn't you? That's exactly how they regard the Arabs of the West Bank, of Lebanon, of Gaza, and so on. And that's a precise explanation of exactly why there's such heartlessness in Israel today. You know, after the Blitz in Lebanon in 1982, in which Menachem Begin authorized the slaughter of 17,500 innocent refugees in the camps of southern Lebanon, he said he referred to these innocents there as two-legged animals, and his chief of staff Rafael Eitan called them. He referred to the Blitz as a shooting cockroaches in a bottle. Now that's the mentality in the leadership, the military and government leadership of Israel, which has existed under Begin, under Shamir.
Isn't that Menachem Begin for the younger crowd is the one of the original modern day terrorists? He invented modern terrorism.
Oh, he did. Absolutely. You see, Israel, the evangelicals have been encouraged by Jewish propaganda to invent this mythology that God authorized the return of his chosen people to the promised land during the 20th century, and that in the battles, the 67 war, the Yom Kippur war, and so on, God came down and he fought with Israel just like he fought with Joshua and Moses and so on. That's a lot of nonsense. This whole mess in the Middle East is a result of Jewish atrocities against the Arabs. And I'll just give you a nutshell of why the Mideast bleeds today. Back just before the British were about to leave in the spring of 1948, Menachem Begin and his terrorist forces consisting of Ergun and the Stern Gang, they descended on the peaceful sleeping village of Deir Yassin, which is west of Jerusalem, and they slaughtered 254 innocent people. Some 30 women were pregnant. They ripped them open. They raped them. They slaughtered there for 2 days, throwing the bodies down into the empty wells, burning the houses, dynamiting them, and so on. And finally, the British started to come and heard what was going on, and so they put all these women and children, they stripped them naked, and they paraded them down King George V Avenue, right down through Jerusalem, and there were crowds of Jewish sympathizers to Ergun and the Stern Gang lining the streets, and these people were spitting on these naked survivors of Deir Yassin, the women and children and the old people, and actually pelting them with stones. And this is how it started. Now, stage two of this was that Ergun and Begin realized they had a really good thing because this was terrorizing the Arabs. So they got in their trucks with loudspeakers, and they blared in Arabic all throughout the environs of Jerusalem. They gave this warning to all the Arabs in Israel that if they didn't all flee from Israel, that the Ergun, the Jewish Haganah, and Ergun and so on would do the same thing to all those Arabs that they did at Deir Yassin. And so about 750,000 Arabs abandoned their fertile olive orchards, their citrus orchards, their prosperous businesses and farms and homes and villas in Israel, and 90% of them fled over into Jordan and up into Lebanon, down into Gaza to get away from this reign of terror that was going on in Palestine just before the British left. Now, there in a nutshell is what happened. 90%. 90% of the Arabs that lived in Palestine left Palestine, and then, of course, the Arab armies of Jordan and Syria were outraged at this tremendous evacuation of their comrades, their Islamic and Arab comrades, including many Christians, I should mention, in Israel proper. And they came in, and then the Israelis were supplied by the latest arms, planes and cannons and tanks from Stalin himself. Ordered the Skoda Works in Czechoslovakia to send down these massive shipments of the arms, and Israel was able to defeat the Arabs very, very handily. But then, here you have 800,000 Arabs trying to come back. They thought they could come back, and Israel says, no, you cowards, you left your farms and orchards and businesses. You're not worthy to come back. And so Israel took over probably... It took over 90% of those towns in Israel, and it bulldozed, it literally bulldozed, I think, about 80%. Lilienthal gives the figures in his book, The Zionist Connection, about 80% of all towns, Arab towns in Israel were bulldozed, and Jewish towns were built on top of them. And so this, right there, we have the seminal reason for the tremendous antipathy, the hatred and enmity that's going on now in the Middle East, because the whole Arab world from Morocco to Indonesia realizes that a tremendous injustice was done against the millions of Palestinians who through this power.
Well, what we do know from my interview with James Innes as well, that the USS Liberty off the coast, El Arish, was being monitored that morning of the attack on the USS Liberty by Israel, and they watched the Israelis force prisoners of war from Egypt to dig their own graves, yes, and then shot dead in the grave and have the next group of men come forward and fill in their friends and start digging their own graves. And yes, this was witnessed by the Liberty, and that was why the Liberty was attacked, and they tried to sink it, murdering 34 American soldiers and injuring 174, Ted.
Yeah.
And then the American government would not allow that truth to be spoken under penalty of imprisonment.
Yeah.
That'll tell you what sway these people have in our American society. And if you take a look at the Scofield Bible, the Scofield Bible doesn't necessarily change the words, but on the borders of the Bible is the interpretation they give, and it is a very skewed interpretation, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. You see, the law of God, the law of the Bible itself, says that the Jews cannot enter Palestine as a nation again unless they are obedient to God and even to Jesus Christ. They have to come in repentance and humility, exercising justice and righteousness and mercy, especially to the stranger in the land, as the Old Testament commands. And yet what the Scofield Bible does says that, oh no, that's all back in the Old Testament. There's a new dispensation now, a new age of grace, which says that the Jews can come back to Palestine in violence and in rebellion and in unbelief. And this whole idea of Scofield dispensationalism, you see, is the right to overthrow the basic simple ethics of right and wrong found in God's holy scriptures and adopt a Zionist unlawful mentality.
Well, let me tell you another example here that will really curl your hair, Ted. In Tel Aviv alone, it is estimated by a Jewish writer, a Jewish investigative reporter, that there are 10,000 slaves, and sex slaves in homes and businesses across Tel Aviv alone. Tel Aviv has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of brothels across the city where goyim are used as vessels for sex. And owned by people, literally owned by them. And sex slavery is run worldwide by this same group, Ted. Does that surprise you? It makes me sick.
Well, Tel Aviv is the whorehouse of the Middle East. And that underscores what we're saying about the blindness of evangelicals to call these Jewish leaders in Palestine God's chosen people. Nonsense. St. Paul makes it very clear in the book of Romans, chapter 9, 10, and 11, that these evil Jews who rejected Jesus Christ are the broken-off branches. They're they are enemies of the gospel. They are not the true chosen people. He does say that the true chosen people of God, of the Jews, are those who will turn to Jesus in the last days and repent and give Jesus the kind of obedience that he demands. And according to the scriptures, they will come back and they will occupy the land and they will inherit those promises, even those land promises given to Abraham, but they'll do it in love and peace and meekness, as Jesus said, that the meek shall inherit the earth and delight themselves in the abundance of peace. So,
well, you know, I that's a doctrine of religion. I'm talking here today about on-the-ground suffering of human beings in a geopolitical sense. And, of course, we understand that there has been a usurpation of many of the governments of that region, including in Jordan, where the King Abdullah is nothing more than a puppet for these criminals. We know the same thing has happened in the instituting of the Saud family being put into power at the beginning of the last century by the same criminal group and supported through Rothschild financing. And we know the same thing happened in many other areas in the Middle East. So basically, the Arab populations there don't even have good representation in their governments to support them.
No, they don't. But the whole Arab world is as disorganized as the Jews are organized. And I believe that the correct interpretation of 17th and 18th chapters of Revelation, where it describes Babylon the Great, a one-world government ruling over the world with a false Messiah, the Antichrist, with seven heads and ten horns, and the great harlot sitting on his back, red with the blood of the saints, and so on. That describes what we're seeing right now. I was reading a remarkable article a few minutes ago by Israel Shamir, in which he is saying now that the Jews are actually crowing and boasting that they, for all practical purposes, they have taken over the world. The Goyim are disunified. They are lacking in courage and so on. And now we're seeing Israel. The Knesset several years ago voted the right of the Israeli government to demand extradition from any country in the world of those people who question the 6 billion figure of the Holocaust. And even right now we're seeing with Chris Bolin the long arm basically of Mossad now to hit anywhere in the world, going across national boundaries, those intellectuals who are just as dangerous, if not more, than Hezbollah in Lebanon. They're not bringing a helicopter gunship over Chicago quite yet and shooting down a laser-guided cluster bomb on Chris Bolin. But that's what they have in mind. They are wanting to take Dominion and send out a hit squad throughout the world, bringing down those who resist them.
Well, I will till the last breath resist them, and I know you will. And the fact is, any moral person that looks at the sickness that's coming out of this leadership of the Zionists has to understand that we are in a terrible situation now, and the amount of human suffering just witnessed recently in Lebanon is only, I believe, the tip of the iceberg here. I think these people have horrors to be visited upon many, many peoples. And I'm wondering, Ted, it seems like they'd be willing to go to any lengths. I mean, there is a complete suspension, a teleological suspension of ethical principles in all of their actions. And I'm wondering, basically, is there something we can do to turn around the sickness in their community, or do we have to marginalize them so that they cannot injure us anymore? What is the way forward?
Well, I don't hold much hope for the Jewish community, even the assimilated Jewish community, to do much to hold back these evil leaders, because these evil leaders have no sympathy for what they call self-hating Jews who turn upon them, and they'll go after them. What I'm doing is I am calling out to everyone who listens to me on talk radio or who get my e-alerts. And I should mention that I've been writing some pretty hot material at truthtellers.org. At truthtellers.org,
yeah,
People can read my weekly, bi-weekly email updates on all of this, giving a lot of documentation, what I've been saying here today, and get on my e-list. But we have to we have to become very specific now about who is the prime mover behind the evil legislation, the anti-Christianity, the homosexuality, the media corruption, the war credits to go for war in Iraq and Afghanistan, who's voting that in Congress and so on. It is all getting back to these evil Jewish leaders. It's time to identify that eye of this evil octopus that is coming against us. And unfortunately, that brings with it the possible charge of being anti-Semitic or hateful or unloving among the Christians and so on. But we have got to identify our enemy. And I just encourage our listeners, many of whom do listen to Alternative Talk Radio, to call in and don't take any more of this obscure terminology from talk show hosts. Talk about the secular humanists or the New World Order or liberalism and all that kind. Let's just cut to the chase. Now, let's have some honesty out of talk show hosts. Let's say it's the evil Jewish leaders or the Zionists, whatever, but we've got to smoke them out and shine a light on them like rats in a garbage dump. And when that light is shined upon them, it does have a tendency for them to die for cover.
Well, we are going to continue the light shining at that. I got to be honest with you, I think the effectiveness of our efforts is why things are heating up right now. And yes. I've got to tell you, they are scurrying and scampering for cover right now. Yes. And I think these are the evidences of desperation in them. And this traction that you, myself, Eric, and Christopher Bolin, and many, many, many others out there, Mike Rivero and others, have brought upon this group is only the beginning. What we need from the community of listeners that we have and the adherence to the truth is to begin to tell their friends and relatives and family that this is the truth about the world today, and that, in fact, if you take a look at almost every negative or sickening event in human history that has visited upon us in the last 100 years, you will find these people as orchestrators behind it in every single instance.
Absolutely. Well, I believe we have a real position of advantage here with Chris Bolin, just as we did 2 years ago when the ADL authorized the persecution, the arrest of those Christians for as hate criminals in Philadelphia. There's a tendency of despotism to go too far. It gets too proud, too confident, and so on. And that's kind of their Achilles heel. When they go too far, then we can leap in and dramatize who's behind it, and dramatize the conspiracy and the error. And yeah, that's something that every listener here today, you can go to your pastor, you can download this broadcast on your computer, you can print out my emails, you can go to I Am the Witness and so on, and get these materials and begin educating your conservative group or your church, civic organizations, and call in and call to Congress and protest. We just need to raise a holy howl now of protest. And that does kind of throw a wet blanket, at least for the time being, on their aggressiveness.
Well, I'm urging the people, especially in relation to Chris Bolin, to call up the trustees of this Hoffman Village. They can go to Hoffman Village on the internet and find out this community. You'll see it, the Hoffman Village, Hoffman Estates Village on the internet. And you can get the Board of Trustees phone numbers, and you can get the mayor's phone number, and you can get, call up the leadership, not the police department. These people are paid thugs. They could find, baboons to do the kind of legwork that they do. But it's the elected leadership that needs to be informed about the kind of sicknesses that are being meted out in their name. There may be some good people there thoroughly unaware of what's happened in their name, and we need to inform them, Ted.
Yeah. Well, Israel is becoming much more aggressive. It wants to see what it can get away with. And frankly, it wouldn't surprise me if Israel would make a request to George Bush to have Chris Bolin shipped to Israel David Irving and Ernst Zundel and so on have been either extradited or imprisoned in Europe. That's their next step. In fact,
well, I don't think that I'm immune from this kind of persecution either over here in France, especially in France. And I've got to be honest with you, I'm keeping a very, very watchful eye on events around me, because I'll tell you something, I feel like this is because of the traction we've got, they have to deal with people like me and Eric and you and Christopher Bolin. Because look, we're knocking the tar out of them and we're exposing their crimes, and it's damaging them, and it's very clear that it is. And I know that they're going to take action now. The response should be absolute outrage about Christopher, and let them know that that anything worse than this would be manifest in ways they can't even control.
That's right. Yeah, there has to be a collective cry. Now, a lot of people, including even some talk show hosts, will say, "Well, I'm going to kind of sit, I'm going to hold back here, I'm going to see what happens." That's fatal. You can't sit around and see what happens. You have to go on the offensive. You have to remember how we got freedom here in America. In our founding fathers were consisted of farmers and merchants and average people who picked up their muskets and they went off to the neglect of their families and fortunes, and many of them lost their livelihood and even their lives in order to give us liberty. And so it's a very small thing for Americans right now to talk to your pastor, call into the talk shows and raise a ruckus about this, and be specific that it's coming from these evil Jewish leaders. You've got to become specific, because there's lots of people grousing and bellyaching about the situation in the world that does nothing to harm these evil leaders. What they fear is, as I said, shining a spotlight of specific identification upon them.
Well, Ted, I told you about this idea we have about running for Congress and having the right to uncensored access to all radio and television. That means for an $85 fee, and you get a write-in candidate ballot, you have the paperwork that proves you are a candidate for a congressional office. You can carry that over to a radio station, and they have to put on your message uncensored, and it goes out to the mainstream. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't need a lot of money to get the message out. This would break the barrier that everybody has faced with talk radio being a fringe expression, and we could break through to the mainstream with this idea. And it has to be executed soon, because you cannot file for that absentee ballot after the beginning of September. So those of you out there who want to make this message really ring true into the mainstream society, then what we can do here is get these ads on large radio stations. For example, Ted, I don't know if you know this, but even in the New York market, at a very big radio station with a 200,000 listener audience, for $500 you can get a 30-second spot at the primest time of the day. That means if you told the truth about 9/11 and said that the Mossad, along with the 9/11, with the CIA's elements, and talked about who did it and when, everything out on the table, they can't censor it.
Uh-huh.
They cannot censor.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity, I think. Yeah. If we pass it up, I don't think we have 2 years to wait until the next election cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to get back to you with some thoughts on that, Daryl.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, Ted Pike, as usual, today a lot of energy here, because all of us are being threatened here. Our very lives are under threat here, and our freedoms, our families. Christopher Bolin's young 9-year-old daughter watched this sick display in their front yard. This kind of stuff is going to visit each and every one of us, but the people with the most powerful profile first. And we can't let them. This is really the crunch time for everybody to stop battling back against these people in earnest. No more hiding behind, your keyboard over there. We've got to stand up and be heard, ladies and gentlemen. And Ted Pike, you have always put your head above the parapet here. And I appreciate that so much.
Well, the feeling's mutual. You know, the old saw says, in order for evil to triumph, all it takes is for good men to do nothing. And it doesn't matter, folks, how much you know about the conspiracy, on and out. It doesn't matter how much you listen to talk radio or read the conservative magazines. If you don't speak out, if you do nothing, evil is going to triumph. Just remember that.
That's right. Well, Ted, I want to thank you for coming on again today. We did cover a whole lot of subject matter, and I think it was inspirational in that it kind of brought to focus just the kind of enemy we face. And this is, they are, and make no mistake, they are our enemy in every sense of the term. And I want to thank you. You're, as usual, powerful stuff. Truthtellers.org is your website. And you can also go to IamTheWitness.com and press on this particular broadcast, and you will be brought to Ted Pike's website as well. So, and either way, you can get to his information about some of his emails and his alerts. You can sign up for those alerts to become part of it, and get the full information from you, Ted. And again, I want to thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Daryl.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is the Reverend Ted Pike, and I am Daryl Bradford Smith, and I'd like to thank you all for listening today. And until next time, bye-bye. Be well.